Welcome to the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. Illinois StarNet envisions a future where early childhood professionals and families have the supports needed to provide all children with a high-quality, equitable education in inclusive environments. StarNet's mission is to promote evidence-based inclusive practices for young children with disabilities, professional development to support educators and families, meaningful child outcomes through innovative and engaging learning experiences. To find out more about StarNet Regions 1 and 3, please visit starnet.org/home. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Bridget Meese, and here with me is Cecilia Mintz. We are early childhood special education professional development specialists with StarNet Regions 1 and 3. We are here today with Kirsten Munson and Joanna Pushluck-Shimmick to discuss a few of the lesser-known senses that can impact children's development or behavior in a three-part podcast series. We will discuss interoception, the vestibular system, and the proprioceptive system. Joanna, please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background working with children, professionals, and families.
My name is Joanna Pushluck-Shimmick. I am an occupational therapist at Chicago Pediatric Therapy and Wellness Center, where I've been working there for about 6 years. I went to school in Chicago at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I have been working in pediatrics since I graduated. I've worked with children in early intervention, so birth to three. I currently work at an outpatient pediatric clinic, seeing kids basically from babies through teenagers with a wide variety of challenges and diagnoses, and then have also collaborated with some teachers in schools, and I've gone into some school settings as well, and I've also run some groups. And most of the children I see are kind of that preschool, early elementary age, but I have seen babies all the way up through adult or through teenagers. A lot of my population are kiddos that have sensory processing needs. And I've also taken some more courses in sensory processing.
Okay, I will introduce myself. My name is Kirsten Amundson. I am an occupational therapist at Chicago Pediatric Therapy and Wellness Center. I have been at this position for about 2.5 years, but prior to this position, I was at another outpatient clinic, and I have also worked in a therapeutic day school and early intervention. Similar to Joanna, I also have run some groups. I've been doing pediatrics since I graduated as well. I went to the University of St. Louis in Missouri, where I got my bachelor's and my master's in occupational therapy. I primarily work with kids about 2 to 7, I would say, are my primary age groups right now, although I do work with children birth through, I would say, 18. Very similar to Joanna, I have a lot of kiddos with sensory processing differences, different diagnoses like autism, ADHD, and more. And that is my primary population I've been working with right now.
Before we begin, we want to remind everyone about the importance of consulting with an occupational therapist when implementing some of these strategies. Can you explain the importance of this for our audience?
Yeah, I think we want to recruit an OT or consult with an OT to make sure that we're, you know, they have the specialized training to monitor for those desired effects that we're looking for. And we want to make sure that we're not going in the opposite direction, that we're really getting the desired outcomes that we're looking for, and just ensuring that everything is put into place with safety in mind, especially if a child has certain conditions or diagnoses, and just ensuring that we are being safe with all of our practices we're putting into place for our children.
The sense we are going to discuss in the second podcast of the series is the vestibular system. We will talk about what it is, what to look for in children, and what strategies can be used to support the development of this sense. Let's start out by talking about what is the vestibular system.
Your vestibular system is your sense of balance. It's your sense of spatial orientation, It helps you coordinate movement with balance as you move through space. It's where your head position is in space. Is it upright? Is it tilting to the side, to the left, to the right? It also kind of processes like speed of your motion. So it's a really big sense, does a lot of things for your body. I don't know if you've ever had experienced like vertigo or something like that. That's kind of that vestibular sense of that inner sense of balance and being able to maintain that upright posture as you move through different spaces. It's a very powerful sense. It can be calming or alerting for people. And there's lots of different movements that can activate that kind of your vestibular system that can also be calming or alerting, such as like swinging. But if you're going fast, that's going to be a little bit more alerting. If you're going slow, it's going to be a little bit more calming. Bouncing on a ball, lots of different movements. So it's a big kind of component of just like where, how we move through spaces safely.
Okay. So what does the vestibular system look like for infants, toddlers, preschoolers, and looking at that early elementary age?
Yeah, sure. So I can jump in here for a minute. So in all of these ages, we should really see that movement should be soothing, especially in those infant years. We should see that like that rocking movement or being held or things like that should be really soothing for us. So if we're noticing things like delayed milestones or really just stress with that movement, kids that might be getting motion sick in the car with like a really short ride, those late walkers, those are times where we're seeing that might be some dysfunction within our vestibular system. As they get older, if we're noticing that they're seeking the movements quite a lot or avoiding, that might be another indicator that there's dysfunction in this system. It might look like frequently falling, being afraid of the stairs, or participating in playground activities. And on the reverse, it might be some of those kids that are really risky, are fearless on the playground. So there is some differences between, you know, hyper and hypo functioning in this system and what that looks like as far as dysfunction in this system.
You kind of touched on this, but could you go in a little bit more in depth on what signs, what other signs you might see with a child that's struggling with their vestibular system?
Are you talking about one age in particular or just kind of across the board?
Kind of in general, sure. what you might notice.
So I think that in a classroom setting, a lot of times, we see kind of our biggest referral, I feel like, is like those kids that have a hard time sitting still. They're just constantly up out of their chair. They're moving throughout the classroom, just having a hard time keeping their body in one place. They might be some more of those like vestibular kind of seekers. They're just needing a lot of movement. On the flip side of that, as Kirsten mentioned, might be more of that like motion sickness. Kiddos that are really like hyper responsive to movement. So they get in the car for 5 minutes and they're already feeling really sick, or they ride the bus to school and they're feeling sick when they get to school. So those are kind of two big red flags there. We also have our kiddos who, they are up and moving around at more of our toddler age. They are walking. But then, you know, you put them at the bottom of the stairs or at the top of the stairs, they're terrified to go down the stairs, or they're going down, scooting on their bottom. Those are those kids that are probably a little bit more, they are a little bit more hyper responsive to that. They're like terrified of getting their feet off the ground. They don't know kind of like how to be upright against gravity. So they're putting their feet up, or they're putting their hands and their feet down as they go down the stairs, scooting on their bottom, just kind of doing anything they can to be as close to the ground as possible. So that's kind of one way those hyper responsive kiddos, what they might look like. Those hypo responsive kids are those ones that are like running, moving, constantly in motion to the point where it's getting in the way of being able to like do functional daily activities, like playing appropriately or getting dressed or eating a meal, things like that, you know, within the realm of whatever is expected developmentally. Does that kind of make sense or clarify in any way?
Yes, it does. What attributes did you... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to jump into that. I feel like those hyper-responsive kids sometimes get missed because they're the kids that just kind of sit there or they're really safe on the playground. They often are like being praised for being safe on the playground or just wanting to be on the ground. And they, I think they often get missed in the classroom because they are not causing, they're not bumping into other kids. They're not the ones jumping off the top of the playground. So I think sometimes these kids fly under the radar a little bit, but I think an important thing to note here is we want our kids moving, obviously with safety in mind and things like that. We don't want them excessively seeking this movement, but we do want them to be moving, right? So I think those hyper-responsive kids often get overlooked in the sensory system. So I think that's another important thing to note here.
Yes. Thank you, Kirsten, for saying that, because I think that's very valuable and just something good for all teachers and people to keep in mind is that like sometimes our like very well-behaved ones mm-hmm. are the more hesitant, you know, like they, but then yeah. like, are they truly processing everything appropriately in their environment? Are they like cautious because they're having a hard time processing that movement and what's happening, you know? So there's both sides of the spectrum there to keep in mind.
And I could see that the children that are hypo maybe being mistaken for like ADHD and things like that, because that's that constant motion where they don't seem to slow down.
Absolutely. That definitely happens.
Yeah. I could totally see that. Uh-huh. What activities do you recommend for educators for either hypo or hypersensitive children?
So I'm going to start with some of the more like hyper-responsive. So those kiddos that are more fearful of movement. What I would recommend is a lot of just like encouragement, right? We want to encourage our kids to move a lot more. Maybe you can use like peers at recess. Look at how they are going up the ladder and down the slide, right? Seeing if kind of using those peers to motivate them. Sometimes, you know, peer models can be really helpful for some of our kids, but we also want to be understanding that that activity might be really a strong, fearful reaction for that kid. And so we want to encourage them, but we never want to force them to do anything. So encouraging movement as much as possible within that environment. I would say in a classroom, I think for all of these kids, doing like yoga or different activities like that can be helpful because that like kind of challenges that vestibular system with different balance activities or getting your head in a variety of different positions. Some of our kids that are hyper responsive to movement really only want to keep their head in that upright position in the center of their body. They never want to move their head out of that position or turn their head. And so getting them to kind of participate in these different movement-based activities can be really beneficial for those kiddos. And if you have a kid that's kind of that like low arousal, that could be helpful too, getting their head out of that midline upright position by using yoga, doing bear walks, different kind of activities like that, where their head is moving outside of that middle position, that can really kind of help activate that vestibular system and like wake them up, increase their arousal level a little bit, but also kind of just challenge them and help them learn that like movement is okay. And it doesn't have to be this very scary thing for their body.
Do you mind if I jump in real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
I think another thing, when you're encouraging these children that are really fearful of movement, and like we said, we don't want to push them into anything that makes them feel really uncomfortable because that can create further fearfulness. But I think letting them know during their movements that this is safe and this is okay and I'm here to help you. I think that's a huge thing of like, I'm here for you and this is a safe thing to do for your body and we are safe, and kind of rewriting that narrative of this is not scary, this is safe, we can do this together. And then if your child does engage in something that they haven't done before, obviously that really positive praise and just I'm so proud of you for trying that. Even if they didn't like it and it still feels really scary, like I'm so proud of you for trying something new or trying something that felt really scary and hard. So obviously that positive praise is going to be a really big piece here too.
Yeah, I love that. So for on the other side of the spectrum here, for our hypo-responsive kids, these are our kids that are seeking a lot of movement or they're unable to sit still in the classroom. There's a ton of different like adaptive seating options out there that sometimes I recommend for like our older kind of kids. There's wiggle cushions. There's like rocker chairs, different things like that, that I think can be helpful, sitting on, being able to sit and bounce on a yoga ball. So lots of different like seating adaptations. So that way they can get that movement that they need, but kind of in that more right kind of seated, or basically they can still get the movement they need, but at their desk using those adaptive seating options. Also just making sure that those kids have access to movement breaks throughout the day. I feel like it's a challenge in all schools and ages that there's this, like, we must have high test scores, but that actually takes away from, you know, like kids just don't have recess for as long as they used to. And so I think making sure that they still get access to that movement time is super, super, super helpful. There's so many great movement activities for the classroom, especially online, like on YouTube. What are some of them? There's like lots of the Cosmic Kids Yoga, Danny Go, just a bunch of those different options. So many out there these days, which is great. I had another thought.
The Cuckoo Kangaroo is another good one.
Oh, yeah. Lots
of movement-based things. You can search like brain breaks on YouTube, or on just even Google has lots of great ideas of how to get your kids moving. We always recommend yoga because that's can be very organizing for some of our kiddos, or most of our kiddos, I would say. So those are definitely some different things that we recommend teachers do in the classroom.
Thank you. Yeah. And the one I did come back to the thought that I had, the one other thing I was going to add that slipped my mind before was that incorporating movement into the activities we're doing in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So if we're learning, you know, to match lowercase letters and uppercase letters, let's put the lowercase A's on the left side of the classroom and put the uppercase A on the right side of the classroom, right? And being able to match them. So all the students are moving back and forth as they're also kind of doing that more academic based activity. So finding ways to incorporate movement into the just daily activities in the classroom.
So a lot of the strategies you've talked about could also be used by families as well. Are there any other strategies you can think of that would be specific for families to practice at home in helping to develop the vestibular system?
I often recommend, which I think this lends itself a little bit better to home-based versus school, like setting up different like obstacle courses and things like that. I think that's a little bit easier at home. versus inside the classroom, but you know, you can probably kind of set something up that way too in the classroom, but, you know, having different circles or spots, or like using couch cushions to do like a little lava or obstacle course. So many of my kids are into making lava courses where the floor is lava. So kids have to jump from one thing to the next, from one couch cushion to the next. And then they can do a forward roll across the floor, right? So they're getting their head and getting in a bunch of different positions. They're activating that vestibular system with all of those balance activities. And then they're rolling, something like that. I love using hallways at home. So putting maybe like a game board on one side of the hallway, and every time it's your turn, you have to do three forward rolls to the board, take your turn and then go back to the beginning, or doing three like log rolls across the floor, or doing a scooter board on your belly across the floor. So like just kind of incorporating all of those different movement activities at home in a hallway with using games or a puzzle, getting puzzle pieces, different things like that. I think lends itself really nice to some different home options as well.
Yeah. And I think some other things you can do at home, kind of outside of the home, is things like going to the playground or finding like an open gym nearby, or if families have the means, some extracurricular activities like gymnastics or dance classes, things like that are really great as well to really explore those vestibular systems a little bit more too.
Is there anything else that you can think of that educators or families should know about the vestibular system before we wrap up today?
I think if at a school-based setting, if you have an OT to consult with you, I think something that's really helpful for these kids is creating a really good sensory diet to get consistent movement opportunities. Can be really helpful to get that need like satiated throughout the day. So I find often that kids just aren't getting quite enough. And that's why we're seeing all that seeking, is because they're not getting it enough throughout the day, and just making sure that we have enough opportunity for them throughout the day to get all those movements that they need.
Joanna, do you have anything else you wanted to add with that?
I think that's a good one. Let's see. I think just keeping in mind that the vestibular system is a pretty powerful one. So it can do both things, right? It can be both calming and alerting. And so, you know, making sure that our kiddos that are maybe on the other side of it, that are maybe a little bit more lower arousal, would also benefit from more of that movement, because I think that's such a great point to keep in mind. Just reiterating that fact that, you know, we also have those kids that are a little bit low arousal that slide under the radar. So it's just a very powerful system that I think incorporating all these strategies or different movement activities throughout the day can benefit kind of everyone in both of those categories that are maybe hyper-responsive or hypo-responsive as well.
I do think I have another one I just thought of. Joanna, I don't know if you want to jump in on this at some point too, but I think just keeping in mind that our kiddos that are seeking this movement so much often are kind of labeled as like troublemakers, or they're bumping into kids, they're constantly moving, and they're constantly getting, you know, told to sit back down and things like that. And I think just keeping in mind that they're not doing these things intentionally, right? That their body just truly needs this movement, and they're having a hard time controlling it. So I think just like being empathetic or to their sensory system, and just noting that they really are trying their best to keep it together. And sometimes it's just really challenging of just maybe getting on their level of like, I can see that you really need to move right now. Let's go do a movement break together, or let's go do what can help your body right now. And just keeping that in mind with those kiddos that are constantly getting up and moving, and rather than getting them in trouble or making them feel like they're in trouble, just trying to figure out how you can best help them in those situations, which I know can definitely be challenging in a school setting, but really just trying to understand that they're not doing with any intention of being disrespectful or not listening. This is just what their body is needing, and they're trying to listen to that need.
And you're right, that can be challenging in the classroom. However, when we meet that need, that can reduce a lot of those challenges.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I also think people are kind of afraid that if they let them have that movement, it's going to make them more excited, but they don't realize that that's actually going to help them come down. Is if they're allowed to move and they get that extra movement, then they're going to be able to manage themselves better in the classroom.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is such a great point. Yep. And I think Kirsten mentioned before, we always like to kind of add in, right, if it is too much for kids, which it, you know, movement can be exciting for some kids, we can always incorporate more of those kind of heavy work activities, or like taking some deep breaths to kind of support that transition. So kiddos aren't having to go from this really fun, exciting, they need the movement kind of activity to jumping back into sitting still. There's kind of that middle ground where we can add in some other kind of slow your body down kind of activities too. But yes, it's so important to remember that our kids need to move. Even, you know, kids that don't have vestibular challenges, all of our kids need to move. And there's so many expectations to sit and be still and attend, but everybody benefits from movement, even as adults.
And I think proactively taking those moments to move is going to be so much more beneficial than reactively having to then take even more time out of your day trying to regulate this child and doing more movement. So I think oftentimes I hear from teachers, we just don't have the time to do the movement activities. I'm like, well, if we take a couple minutes here, then we can avoid the 10-minute, you know, meltdown this child has later, or, you know, the difficulties of them trying to sit and attend, if we just took those couple minutes prior to really get them regulated and be proactive about helping them feel regulated rather than having to reactively take more time later. So you end up saving yourself time by proactively implementing these different strategies rather than having to go back and do stuff later.
Thank you both again for joining us today and talking to us about the vestibular system. We look forward to seeing you again next time when we talk about the proprioceptive system. Thank you for listening to this episode of the StarNet Regions 1 and 3 podcast. If you have any questions or concerns,
please reach out by emailing starnet@wiu.edu or submit a request by clicking on the Request Services tab on our homepage.